On Pesach, we have several mitzvos during the day. We have mitzvah of matzah, we have mitzvah of mar, mitzvah of dal kosos, but the mitzvos are very much connected to each other. The Korban Pesach is al matzos mar miyachluhu. You eat it together with matzah and mar, and it's all about the same event. It's all about the same story. It's about Yitzias Mitzrayim. It's about the experience. On Sukkot, we have multiple mitzvos, but the mitzvos don't really seem to correspond to each other at all. It's almost like an accident that these mitzvos happen to meet on the same day. So you have a mitzvah of Sukkot, which represents Anani HaKavod, or Sukkot Mamish, or whatever it is that we are recalling, and then on the other hand, you have a mitzvah of Dalet Minim, which is not retrospective at all. It's not recalling anything. It's just a separate mitzvah sayom that a person has to do. So what if anything, is the connection, meaning, what is the symbolism of Dalet Minim? It's a representation of our success after the Yom Noraim, that we're showing that we've achieved our goals in the Yemei Adin. But is there any actual deep, meaningful connection between the mitzvah of Sukkah and the mitzvah of Dalet Minim in their own right? Or do we just say, no, it just happens to be that we're celebrating after Yom Noraim, we're also commemorating Tzias Mitzrayim, it happens to be we do it on the same day, and they just happen to meet on the same day? Very difficult to assume the latter, right? We'd want to assume the former, that there's some sort of connection. There's even a shita, not acceptable halacha, but a shita in the Gemara, which really suggests that they're connected to each other, that holds that the only thing you're allowed to use is schach for a sukkah is dalet minim shebelulav. That you're only allowed to use the branches from an esrog tree, or aravos, or hadasim, or lulav. Those are the only things you're allowed to use for schach. How could you even have such a havamina? The two mitzvahs have nothing to do with each other. Sukkah, dalet minim, they seem to have nothing to do with each other. No, but that shita certainly hints to us that there is some connection between the two, that they must have something to do with each other. These mitzvahs must be really connected in some way. Now, it's also interesting that neither of these mitzvahs seem to have anything to do with the real nature of the day of Sukkot as described in the Torah. The Torah describes Sukkot as a Chag Ha'asif, a gathering of the grains. It's a time after the summer's over, everything has grown and has been harvested, and we now bring in, we look at all our wealth, we look at what we've accomplished, we look at what our fields have produced, and there's a great sense of pride in that. And that certainly connects to the theme of reading Koheles on Shabbos Chol HaMoed of Sukkot. But how do the mitzvahs hayom of Sukkah and Lulav fit with the theme that the Torah presents is really the theme of the day, of Chag HaAsif? So number one, what's the connection between Sukkah and Lulav? And number two, what's the connection between Sukkah and Lulav on the one hand and Chag HaAsif on the other hand? Third, the Sefer HaChinuch writes, Lefi sheyamei ha-chag hem yamei simcha gedola li-Yisrael, because the days of Sukkot are a time of great joy for the Jewish people, ki hu eis asifas ha-tvuos u-peros i-ilan bebayis. This is a time where we gather in all the fruits and the produce into the house. Va'az yismuchu b'nei adam simcha rabba. People feel a great sense of joy when they do this. U-mepnekei nikra chag ha-asif. That's why it's called chag ha-asif. So v'tziva hakel la'amo, God commanded his nation, la'asos lefanav chag ba'oso ha'eis, in order to make a celebration at that time, so that the ikra simcha will be l'shmo yisbarach. Meaning, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tried to capture the simcha we're already feeling. He tried to bottle it. You know, you're feeling this great sense of pride, this great sense of joy, this overwhelming sense of simcha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, good, take that emotion, grab that emotion, use that emotion, now channel it toward me. Channel it toward HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's how the Sefer HaChinuch describes what Sukkot is about. It's to take the natural joy that a person feels and channel it to the Ribono Shel Olam. But the idea that material success is the definition of natural joy that a person would feel is somewhat troubling philosophically. That we're going to say, when does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want you to grab that joy and say, okay, now this is what I want you to channel toward me? It's when you experience wealth. Is wealth something that should really be bringing us a great sense of joy? The Gemara in Chagiga Daf Tes tells us, Ya'a aniyusa li hudai. You know what would be really good for the Jewish people? being poor, it's much better for us spiritually than being wealthy. Being wealthy often leads us down the wrong path in terms of our spiritual development. The Parsha Zinu, the pasuk says, "Vayishman Yeshurun Vayivach," and it goes on to tell us how we become fat and we rebel and we forsake HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Vaynavel Tzur Yeshua, so that we scorn HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So essentially, what it tells us is that when we get fat with success, it leads us down a road that ultimately leads us to Avodah Zarah, and it's a curse. It's not a blessing. It's not something that that should be celebrated. So why is it that Sukkot, what exactly is the celebration that the Torah is telling us about in Sukkot? This Chag HaSif, this great joy that we're supposed to be feeling. But maybe I thought that the link between the mitzvos hayom, when we appreciate what the link is, it will provide us with a proper approach to understanding material success. We're celebrating Chag HaSif. Chag HaSif is a celebration of our material success. It's something that Jews throughout the centuries, throughout history, often had a very hard time relating to. What does that mean, celebrating material success? We were so removed from material success, living, we were not always so wealthy, not always doing so well, not always having opportunities to gain a lot in the material world. And but something in certainly 21st century America, Jews can relate to as much as anybody. The idea that we have achieved a certain degree of materialism. We've achieved a certain degree of financial success. We've achieved a certain degree of comfort that is somewhat unusual historically. There have always been a few rich Jews, but you know, to have the kind of comfort that we have now is certainly somewhat rare. And certainly, I don't mean to say that everybody is quite that comfortable. It's certainly not the case. But we're celebrating this Chag HaSif, this celebration of material success. And the Torah and Chazal try to channel that celebration in a certain direction through the mitzvos and minhagei hayom of Sukkot. What do I mean by that? So let's start with the minhag to read Koheles. That gets us mentally into it. It gears our mind in the right direction. Hakol hevel, all the material success we should realize is not a goal. It's not what we're here for. It's ultimately useless. It's ultimately unimportant. I shouldn't say useless. It's ultimately unimportant. It's not what we're looking to achieve. And this was, think about who wrote this. This was written by a king who presided over the greatest period of prosperity in Jewish history. And he's looking and he's saying, Hakol Hevel, I appreciate with perspective that this is not really what it's all about. A sense of what our goals are, what our tool and what aren't goals, but are rather tools that will help us achieve what our real goals are, is very important. Meaning every time we have a new bracha, materially, we should be able to look at that and not say, this is my success, but this may enable me to achieve some of my real goals, which are goals in Ruchnius, which are goals in Chesed, in Avodah, in Gemilas Chesedim, in Torah, in all different areas of spirituality. So the first message from Koheles is attitudinal. It's not even Lamaisa. It's just shift our attitude. We have these storehouses of grain. We see this great success. Realize that this isn't what it's all about. That this is something that is a tool to be used to achieve something more. And then we have the mitzvah of sukkah. And the mitzvah of sukkah teaches us what to actually do in order to be able to maintain that perspective, in order to be able to remember that perspective. Tzei midiras keva, and go live b'diras arai. That we're supposed to leave the comforts of our own home, and we go to the diras arai. And no matter how much money we have, the sukkah reminds us that it's not appropriate for us to live overly lavish lives. Our lifestyles should not be ostentatious. We should not flaunt our wealth, and that's the same midiras keva. But I could afford a much better house than my 10x12 hut in my backyard that doesn't have a real roof. You know what my raya is, that I could afford a much nicer house? I have one. It's right there. It's right next to that hut. And yet we choose, you know what, just because I could afford something nicer doesn't mean I have to have it. I mean, you could afford a fancy car, doesn't mean you have to drive a fancy car. There was a guy in my shul A while ago, he moved out of the neighborhood since then, but he became a partner in like a very, very big law firm, and it was always the greatest nachas that he drove a Hyundai, not even like a fancy Hyundai, you know, like it was, just because you could afford it, it doesn't mean that you have to have it, it doesn't mean that we have to live in that way. There is in Sefer Otzer HaVikuchim, there's a short, I don't remember where I found this, I certainly didn't come up with this on my own, but in the Sefer Otzer HaVikuchim, there's a short dialogue between the king of Portugal and a rabbi, and the king tells the rabbi, and this is the quote, "Before we begin discussing religion, I would like to tell you something that you need to hear. Just listen and accept it. The Jews who become wealthy flaunt their prosperity, and this offends my countrymen. They buy fancy coaches and stylish homes, shocking everyone with their ostentatiousness, for they conduct themselves as only royalty do." It's unbelievable. More things change, more things stay the same. Unbelievable, the description. With their fancy coaches. Fancy, so it's not fancy coaches now, it's fancy cars. The stylish homes that we live in a way sometimes that doesn't reflect the proper sense of tznius that a Jew is supposed to have. Wealth is addictive, and it has a way of turning luxuries into necessities. People begin to view things that are really luxuries and start thinking of them as necessities. And that's best illustrated really by the halacha in Hilchos Tzedakah, Gemara Ksuvos Darshan from the Pasuk, Dei Machsara Sheyachsala, you're supposed to give a person whatever he's missing. Says the Gemara, Afilu Sus, Gemara Ksuvos Samach Zayin, Afilu Sus Lirkov Alav, Ve'eved Larutz Lefanav, that even if the person is used to having a horse to ride on and a servant to run in front of him, then yet that's part of the mitzvah of tzedakah. Why is that part of the mitzvah of tzedakah? That's not a necessity, that's a luxury. No, but the answer is, once he's had it, he starts viewing it as a necessity. So emotionally for him, it will become a necessity. Unless the person thinks, no, I'm able to keep perspective, I can buy all the fancy things, and if ever I can't afford it, I know that these are just luxuries and they're not necessities. The human mind is not really geared to do that. We become used to things, and we start viewing things as necessities. There have been studies about this, where they've questioned people, how much would you pay for this coffee mug? And a person would say, $4, let's say. And then the other people, they would give the coffee mug to as a prize, and they'd say, I'll give you $5 if you give back the coffee mug. I'm not going to give back the coffee mug. No way. Maybe $10, I'll give it back, not $5. But wait a second, they would only pay $4 for it in the first place, but they wouldn't give it back for $5. Because once it's yours, you view it as yours. And it's like, I can't give this up. It's mine. It's something that belongs to me. This is part of who I am, because what I have, and unfortunately, very often the way people define who they are is what they have. Right, who are you? Well, I'm a Mercedes, and I'm a 7-bedroom home, and I'm a, you know, it's the way that that people define themselves. When we're mistapik b'muat, no matter what we have, we become much more flexible and much more capable of adjusting to challenging circumstances. It's particularly true of children that grow up in this neighborhood. I worry often about it, that children are brought up in, you know, parents who make a good living and they want to give their children everything they have, but then for the children everything they're getting becomes a necessity. So all the luxuries that they've been given become a necessity. And what if they don't make quite the same living that their parent made? I'm not just saying if the kids go into chinuch. There are other places where they can work and other fields that they can work where maybe they just won't be as successful as their parents in what they do. Even if they're doctors and lawyers and whatever else, maybe they're just not going to be able to afford all these things. And it's going to be very, very challenging. So that second element of the mitzvah of sukkah teaches us it's okay to be in a diras arai. It's okay not to be in the fanciest place. And then we have the mitzvah of dalad minim. Dalad minim teaches us what to do with our wealth. Now that we know we have proper perspective, Koheles taught us, and we know how to maintain that perspective by going to the diras arai of sukkah. Now that I have this money, what does God want me to do with it? That's the message of Dalad Minim V'Igud Echad. What do the Dalad Minim represent? Many things, but one of the things that the Medrash says that they represent are the different types of Jews. And Lulav Tzarech Eged, at least the Hidur is for to have an Eged, that all the Jews are bound together. All the different types of Jews are bound together as a single unit. When people experience material success, very often one of the pitfalls is that one of their major worries is about protecting their wealth, is about wealth management and protecting their wealth, making sure that they don't lose their wealth, which is a reasonable thing to be concerned about, but not if it comes at the expense of of being properly generous with other people, and appreciating that in attempts to preserve their wealth, it's not okay to step on other people, to lie and cheat in order to stay on top. It's not all about protecting the wealth, it's about using that as a gift of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to help out our brothers and sisters. Our tradition teaches us that the way to preserve our wealth, it's also a Gemara Maseches Ksuvos, the Gemara is an expression, Melach Mamon Chaser. What is Melach Mamon? The salt of money is Chaser, or another gift is Chesed. The salt of money, salt is a preservative. The way to preserve money, you want to preserve your wealth, so give some up, give some away, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling you, like Rav Shimon writes in the Akdamot Shari Yosher, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu telling you, I'm trusting you with this. If I see that you know how to handle it, I'll give you more to trust you with. And if you don't know how to handle it, why would I trust you with it? It's like if you give someone money to invest and he invests it well, you'll give him more money to invest. HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying, I'm giving you money so to see how you handle it. And if you handle it well, I'll give you more of it. David HaMelech counseled when informed of economic difficulties in the country. What did he say in the Gemara Brachos? L'chuv is sparnas uzumizu. First Eitzah is, go support each other. If there are economic difficulties, there are still people that are doing very well, that aren't doing enough to help other people. That's the first line of defense. Now, sometimes it's not enough, and that Gemara wasn't enough in the end, the Gemara tells the story. But that's the first line of defense, David HaMelech says. Shali v'shalecha v'shalach shali, we're all one, and my current material success isn't mine to keep. It's mine to share with those who are going through a more challenging time. So the message of the Chag HaAsif is not a celebration of the wealth that we have. It's a celebration of the knowledge of how to handle that wealth, which involves the perspective that Kohelet gives us, the way to maintain that perspective that our Sukkah gives us, and what to actually do with it, which is the message of the Dalaminim Shebelulav, which all come together.